This is Mishmash, a weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under-the-radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth.
And I'm Zach Orchow. In 2019, Governor Gretchen Whitmer and a bipartisan group of lawmakers signed what was heralded as a massive improvement to Michigan's no-fault law.
And I think it's historic, too, that I'm signing a bill about car insurance in the one place where you can't drive a car. The irony is rich, right? But here we all are standing together on the porch of the Grand Hotel to celebrate this monumental step that we are making forward together. It's not perfect, as the majority leader said, but this is a big step forward. And we're going to continue that walk as we address numerous issues. You know what's on my mind. But this bipartisan plan does a number of things. Number one, it guarantees lower rates for every Michigan driver for 8 years. It protects people's ability to make a choice and to pick their insurance level, their coverage options, including the choice for unlimited coverage, is still an option for drivers. And it strengthens consumer protections by banning insurance companies from using discriminatory non-driving factors like zip code and FICO score, gender, marital status, occupation, educational level, and home ownership.
The law got rid of the Michigan-specific requirement that vehicle owners buy insurance policies that guarantee uncapped lifetime medical benefits for catastrophic crash injuries. But despite Whitmer and others' cheers almost 5 years ago, it has been far from smooth sailing for auto no-fault. The law has been challenged in the courts, and many victims have expressed concerns that they're losing coverage as a result.
Crash victims injured before the law took effect in 2019 won a huge victory at the Michigan Supreme Court last year, which ruled the 45% cut in payments to catastrophic care clinics don't apply to their care. But anyone catastrophically injured after the law took effect still has the problem of insurers reimbursing their healthcare provider 45% less than in 2019, and many clinics are cutting off treatment as a result.
The Michigan Senate last year passed a bill to end the 45% reduction for all care, but the House has yet to act, and advocates for crash victims are extremely frustrated. We asked House Speaker Joe Tate in January whether the House would act on this issue, and here's what he said.
Chair the Carthers has been working diligently around that. So I think that there is something that we can come together and on consensus with, but we know, you know, just what Chair Carter and the Insurance Committee has been doing. They want to make sure that, you know, we're getting as close to right as possible in terms of, you know, what this can look like.
It's been 2 months since Speaker Tate made those comments, that there's been no hearing on the Senate bill in the House since then, let alone action, is why frustration is building among crash victims. Though we should add, insurers continue to defend the law as a significant cost improvement over prior law that they say saves ratepayers money.
So that's the groundwork. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about auto no-fault with Detroit News political editor Chad Livengood. Chad has been following this issue for years and has written some really great pieces on it. You are not going to want to miss that conversation. Stick around. Welcome back to Mishmash. I'm Shayna Roth.
And I'm Zach Orchow. We're here now with Chad Livengood, politics editor for the Detroit News. Hello, Chad.
Hey, guys. How are you doing? Glad to be here.
Glad to have you here. So the auto no-fault saga has not been the rousing, unambiguous success that I think the administration and the lawmakers who voted for it, and probably many residents of Michigan at the time, hoped it would be. You've been following this issue for years. You've done a lot of really great enterprising reporting on it. But what has been the most surprising thing to you about this and where we are now in 2024?
You know, I think back to when I first started covering this issue in 2012, covering it when it would, you know, there would be a hearing. I eventually called it the no-fault fire drill. And it would almost happen every 6 months. So you could almost set your watch to it, where an insurance committee chair would try to hold hearings and try to get a bill going. And they did this particularly under Republican control in those years. That was the Bolger term back then. And so Pete Lund was the chair of the House Insurance Committee, hold a committee, and they would just, you know, they'd you know, go up to 519 and they just get packed with people in wheelchairs. And the people in wheelchairs had a tremendous voice, it seemed. And any movement on trying to rein in no fault or create a fee schedule, even things as simple as a fraud authority, they could never seem to get anything going. Sometimes it was the doing of the legislative leadership. They would try to package everything all into one. They couldn't just do the fraud authority by itself. They just it seemed like they were going for the whole pie every time, and so they just kept failing. And then Mike Duggan gets elected mayor of Detroit. He makes this his issue. He introduces de-insurance. And they continue to try to do these different iterations of some kind of reform bill. It obviously 2019 it kind of finally came to a head. And at the time, I was reporting in Cranes about how this system really was kind of like collapsing in many ways. There was at that time in 2018, two-thirds of the lawsuits, civil litigation in Oakland County, was for auto no fault. The whole name of auto no fault was meant to say that no one is at fault and all bills get paid and you're trying to stay out of court. And what had happened was the whole system was becoming so litigious that there really was a reason to reform it. What we got, I think, it leaves a lot to be desired for a lot of individuals, particularly if you rely on this system if you have the terrible misfortune of getting in a horrific car accident and you need long-term care. The system that has been left for people is not anywhere near what people had enjoyed or relied upon for decades.
Chad, this is a law that Democrats and Republicans voted on, but you've called it a Republican-authored bill. Can you explain that? Because I know recently on social media, some people have gotten a little bit huffy about you framing that way, but I know you have very specific and good reason for that.
Yeah, I mean, well, one, the Republicans were in control of the gavel. Yes, it did have a very big bipartisan win. But the way that they came at the specific major, I will call it a flaw in this law, is this 45% cut in reimbursement rates to home health care companies. And basically any company that doesn't have a service that revolves around a Medicare billing rate, which is a really bureaucratic way of saying Medicare has a whole list of fee schedule that the federal government sets. This is what we're going to pay for an MRI. This is what we're going to pay to set a broken leg. This is what we will pay for your physical therapy if you sustain really bad whiplash or whatnot in a car accident. And what happened was there was all these other forms of care, including 101 personal home care that involves, for some people, showering them, toiletries, feeding them, keeping them alive, literally running a ventilator in their home, because the alternative is that they have to go live in a nursing home. And these people range in age from as young as infants and all the way up to people in their 80s who need care day to day, hour to hour, minute by minute, in some cases. And the inherent flaw with the legislation was that they simply didn't have a Medicare billing code to say we're going to pay 200% of the Medicare. So they came up with this 45% cut across the board, and this was introduced as a substitute on the floor of the House less than 24 hours before the bill passed. And you might recall, this bill passed on a Friday before Memorial Day, and highly unusual, almost rare, wouldn't you say?
Very rare.
Friday session in order to get this bill passed, because everyone wanted to get this done so they could go up to Mackinac Island, an island with no cars, ironically, and sign a bill for auto insurance reform at the Mackinac Policy Conference the next week. And so it was a Republican-offered bill. The Democrats did get a lot of input. Democratic amendments were gaveled down. I don't think there's any denial that the Republicans authored this and a Democratic governor signed it.
So in 2022, the governor announced that there would be these $400 per motorist rebates. Kind of came out of nowhere a little bit. It was in the heat of the governor seeking a second term. It's nothing that she really has direct control over, but it certainly put the pressure on the Michigan Catastrophic Claims Association to do it. And those rebates did happen. Was there a problem with that? Do you think that was, is there a concern that emanated from the decision to rebate what was a large amount of money out of the fund?
Yeah, it's a couple billion dollars that got essentially cashed out of what is essentially a pension fund. It is a trust fund of, at the time, was $23 billion or so dollars. It goes up with the stock market. It goes down with the stock market. It's like anybody else's retirement fund. And so, and it's managed by an entity that is controlled by the auto insurance industry. The whole board of that of the MCCA is all auto executives, with a de facto member from the state insurance commissioner, the appointee of the governor. But beyond that, yes, they said at the time, well, we were preparing to do this anyways. Well, the thing that was seemingly premature about it all is that the Michigan Supreme Court had not ruled yet on whether the underlying law was legal, that whether the legislature had the power to impose these price controls on companies that provided care that essentially they argued was cutting off the ability to do that care. I mean, I use the example over and over. If a company was paid $30 an hour to provide a caregiver, a skilled, you know, semi-skilled, not a nurse or a registered nurse, but someone with skills between, you know, that can do some of these, this home health care that is really intense, very personal at times, they might pay that person $20 an hour and they run their business within the other $10 an hour, overhead, taxes, liability. You cut that by 45%, now they got $16 an hour. And then they got to pay someone within $16 an hour. And they also still got to run a company and business. And so many of these companies simply just walked away. They started walking away when the cuts went into effect in July of 2021. Many of these businesses went under. Or their other lines of business they had to retreat to and do to different types of insurance and payers, private pay or home or some forms of Medicare, but they really had to really scramble. A lot of these businesses really didn't think the legislature would do this. They thought that the legislature would not go this far. And that's actually, I'll try to transition here. This is one of the cases I've been writing about involving this six-year-old girl from Milford, Annabelle Marsh, who has become kind of a fixture at the state capitol. She and her mom will show up and try to talk to lawmakers and sit out in the rotunda. This girl was paralyzed at age 3 in February of 2021 on a snowy spin out accident on US 23 in Brighton. Could happen to any of us. Anybody that drives that any roads in a snowstorm in this state knows that there is an inherent risk of this. This little girl was in her car seat got severely sideswiped by another motorist. Paralyzed from the neck down. Anybody who's a parent knows this. It's just devastating to think about. But this little girl with really cheery disposition has kind of persevered. But the family is in crisis. And so this girl's in the hospital for her first few months. And then she gets out of the hospital in May of 2021. And this company called AdvisorCare out of Grand Rapids, one of the largest home healthcare companies, they have over 1,200 patients in the state. They take on this girl's case, thinking the legislature will not do this. They'll not go through with this. It's not possible that they will actually try to cut off care. And they did that. They did impose the cuts. And so as a result, this company has continued to care for this girl now almost 3 years later, and just taking a loss on their actual cost because she's on a ventilator and it requires by doctor's prescription a registered nurse to be on site to operate that ventilator. And a registered nurse is well more than $30 an hour, particularly in the sort of post COVID labor market for healthcare, which is another thing that obviously we could not no one could have obviously predicted in May of 2019 when they were passing this legislation, that there would be a massive crisis within healthcare and particularly in home healthcare that would just compound this and then inflation and other factors have kicked in. And this whole industry has been absolutely ravaged in the last 3 years.
Chad, are there a lot of stories out there like Annabelle's? I know you've been looking into this for quite a while, and that piece that you mentioned in the Detroit News is incredibly gripping. But I think there might be people out there who are like, well, this is the extreme example. But how common is a situation like hers?
There are three people a day in Michigan who suffer a catastrophic, debilitating injury that qualifies for the MCCA to pay. And what the MCCA is essentially is a reinsurance of, they cover everyone's bill above $600,000. So the insurance company's on the hook for your first $600,000 of medical bills. Well, if you are you're paralyzed in a car accident and you suffer brain injuries or spinal cord injuries of all sorts, and then other types of injuries, that $600,000 is pretty well spent in a couple of weeks. And so then you get put into this system where the MCCA is now essentially in charge of managing your care and deciding what gets covered from there. And so in these last few years since this law went into effect, there's been 1,000 people a year, and that's three people a day. And that, you know, that still seems like a small, it very much is a small number of people. And if you talk about a realm of 7 million drivers, 10 million residents, but you can get auto insurance coverage for anything that involves a car. And so since I wrote this piece, a friend of mine from high school reached out just last night and said that her grandma had read my article, and her grandma was hit by a car in a Meijer parking lot in December of 2022. And that about 6 months ago, her car insurance company cut off physical therapy to her 80-year-old grandma, citing the caps and saying that we're not obligated to pay beyond a certain amount or for a certain number of therapies. And then also what happens a lot of time is the providers will basically keep trying to bill the insurers until they exhaust all their options. And that's what happened with Annabelle more recently. In addition to that company that's been providing care for her at our home in Milford, and says that it is owed $1.3 million in uncompensated reimbursements, she was going every day to a physical therapy facility called Oxford Center in Brighton, ironically, right on a service drive facing US 23 in the same freeway where this little girl was paralyzed. She was going every day, and now they say that they have basically not been paid some $93,000. And this provider cut off care in January, citing non-payment by State Farm. I got State Farm on the record. They cited the law and said that we only pay what the law allows us to pay. And that has become kind of the routine shield that I hear from a lot of defense that the insurance industry or the adjuster will tell families, they'll tell a caseworker. A lot of these folks that have these high acuity injuries, they're in complex cases, they get a case manager assigned to them that the insurance industry pays for because the insurers can't possibly manage all this themselves. So they bring in these caseworkers that kind of help people navigate the medical system, finding care, going to rehab facilities, and even just some simple things as finding the transportation to get there as well. So Annabelle's PT got cut off after about a year. And actually, I interviewed the physical therapist and obviously her mom as well. And both said, like, she made tremendous progress. I mean, the girl, when you have these injuries, you can't, and you can only move your head, but you can't necessarily control your head. And so what a lot of physical therapy does is help build up the muscles in your core so you can actually control it. And this girl went from not having no control of her head to having control enough that she can now move her wheelchair around and go side to side. That is a tremendous gain for someone who has no ability at all. And particularly if you're someone who had ability and just compound it, you know, you've got a little child who can't go to school, by the way, in Michigan without some ability to do some of these things. So her ability to move her own wheelchair around using these machines, it's kind of important in order to be able to enter into a special education classroom, because then there has to still probably be an aide with her, a one-on-one, but it's, you know, is this child's education. There's a lot of things that wrap into every one of these cases. Yes, it is a small number of people among us, but it is some of the most vulnerable people among us.
Chad, there were a lot of issues that critics of the old system raised. If you could summarize what those were, and do insurers have an argument that these changes that were signed into law in 2019 successfully addressed those problems?
Yeah, so I spent years documenting some of these things. When I went to Cranes and left Lansing and went to become a sort of business political reporter at Cranes, I started noticing all these signs in the city of Detroit for 7-day car insurance. And I was like, what's that? And I stopped in and just asked a question one day to one of these agents. And they explained, well, for $100, you can get your tags. And then lo and behold, in this strip mall on Gratiot Avenue, next door was the Secretary of State's office. And I said, oh, so you can get your tags and just go over there and get registered. And the guy said, yeah, then you don't have to pay after that. So I started writing about that. Because it was like, it was the workaround that the industry allowed itself to create. The industry didn't police its own people when it came to this. They went ahead and said it's okay to sell a 7-day product that was clearly a way to get around 52 weeks of car insurance. Secretary of State's office, they didn't think anything of it. They accepted it. And that went on for decades. And a whole company called LA Insurance built a big, huge enterprise around it that was almost specifically located in the city of Detroit, Flint, Lansing, Saginaw, in urban cores. And there was a few other players in that market, but the Department of Insurance finally caught on to that and cracked down and started just leveling fines and taking away licenses from these operators, and it largely went away. You can still do it. You just buy insurance for say you're buying a 6-month plan, like a normal insurance purchase, and then you just cancel it 7 days later or even a day later. There was huge problems like this. Definitely was fraud in this system because there was no cost containment at all. I mean, in our modern healthcare system, Blue Cross negotiates what it's going to pay Henry Ford Hospital for this procedure. They also negotiate what they're going to pay Mary Freebed Hospital in Grand Rapids. Different market, different cost of living, and so they go provider by provider and negotiate rates. the car insurance industry had no control on that. It was whatever they wanted to charge, and then whatever the car insurance industry was willing to pay. So some insurers, they get a $1,000 bill for an MRI, they just pay the bill. And some insurers get a $1,000 MRI for the bill, and they would send $400 because that's what they pay Blue. That's what Blue Cross would pay, and then the MRI provider would decide. I'm either going to live with this, or I'm going to take them to court. And like I said, Oakland County, Wayne County, even Kent County, they had become absolutely entangled in lawsuits, in litigation. And this is just what is known as the first party litigation. This is not the what's known as pain and suffering, what the I refer to as the billboard lawyers advertise. You know who they are. And one of them's name rhymes with Tyke, and he wins apparently. But there was a whole raft of industry that was built around this that they did take advantage of people. They would run people through essentially what were MRI mills. They'd send you to the MRI, then they'd send you to the pain doctor, they'd send you to the chiropractor for adjustment, and then they would also try to, you know, round you up and sue, because these lawyers could get a third of the settlement. And some of these lawyers even owned shares in these businesses that they were sending people through the mill on. So there was a raft of different practices. There's no doubt there was a need for some type of set payment schedule like we have in workers' compensation that was, you know, created decades ago in state law, and as the healthcare industry, has established on a private level.
Chad, I'm curious where Governor Whitmer fits in with all of this. I mean, she signed the big bipartisan package, as you mentioned, on the porch of the Grand Hotel at Mackinac Island. And she said at the time that it was the right thing to do. I mean, has she changed her mind? And does she really own it?
Yeah, I mean, she's had some varying positions at times. Interestingly enough, this physical therapist I interviewed at the Oxford Center said that in a previous job, she met candidate Gretchen Whitmer, who came into another physical therapy facility and gave a speech about how I'm going to protect auto no fault. And then she watched a year later as Governor Whitmer signed a bill that she contended was gutting auto no fault for the protections of these very vulnerable motorists. And so that's not inconsistent with what we saw in the campaign trail in 2018. But there was some politics that just kind of forced the governor's hand here. And I'm as folks try to, like, you know, assign blame here, I'm not in the business of that, but I know what happened here, and that there was a mayor of Detroit, a Democrat, Mike Duggan, who didn't actually have the greatest relationship with Gretchen Whitmer, because you might remember that whole thing where he tried to get someone else to run against her, and then he pairs up with a billionaire real estate mogul and mortgage mogul named Dan Gilbert, who obviously has contributed to Republicans a lot over the years, but Gilbert saw this as a huge issue for his workforce and for the future of the city of Detroit, and so I mean the governor got cornered here by both the Republican majority and by a seemingly ally like Mike Duggan, who had a lot of help from Dan Gilbert. But then she did just lean into this thing and embraced it, and her department, her insurance department, continued to move forward. She has said over time that she thinks that this the fee schedule needs needs to be changed. But she hasn't been very specific. She hasn't been very forceful at all. The fix bill did come out of the Senate last fall and is languishing over in the House Insurance Committee right now, chaired by Representative Brenda Carter of Pontiac, but has not gotten any movement. And there's been no pronouncements from the governor in any of her, you know, major policy addresses, whether it was the one last fall or I guess it was August, or obviously the state of the state. She has not made a huge push by any means to try to get a fix legislation passed, even after the Supreme Court ruled that these people that were injured before 2019 should not have had their rates cut. And I wrote about that. I wrote about this man who died in the hospital, in a hospital bed, 90 minutes after the Supreme Court ruling came down. I had visited him days before because I'd been talking to him. His name is Brian Woodward. He became kind of a really outspoken advocate and also just kind of a case study of like how you actually can, after a catastrophic injury, live a meaningful life. This man didn't lose his brain or his intellect. And taught himself how to, you know, blow into a straw and to type, and to do all kinds of other functions without having his hands. He lived for 30 some years from home in Detroit, and he was like a computer contractor for Ford Motor Company. I mean, a meaningful life, adding, you know, contributing to society. Then he simply couldn't find any home care company to take care of him after the cuts went into effect in July of 2021. So he had to bounce around from various nursing homes that couldn't care for him the same way. And it's not as simple as going to a nursing home. They're not equipped for quadriplegics. And as a result, Brian ended up going to, he slept in 20 some odd different beds over a period of about 2 years. And then he bounced around in hospital beds and nursing home beds. And then he sadly passed away in one last July.
Chad Livengood, thank you so much for joining us here today on Mishmash.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to our guest, Chad Livengood from the Detroit News. Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station, in collaboration with the magnificent Gongwer News Service. Mishmash is hosted and produced by me, Shayna Roth, and Gongwer's Zach Gorchow and Alethea Kasbin. Additional production and editing is done by Hearns Laguerre Jr. Our mixing, mastering, and music is by Sam Bobian. Our digital team is Dave Kim, Sophia Joswiak, and Jenny Sherman. And our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. As always, if you listen to this show and you want to support it, you can do so by leaving us a review or comment wherever you listen. You can also subscribe or follow us on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, basically wherever you get your podcasts. Tell your friends about how much you are learning from Mishmash and how much fun we have here. Make sure you send them a link. Remember, we're produced by a public radio station, which means we are listener supported. So if you really, really like this podcast, you can support WDET by going to wdet.org/give and becoming a member of WDET. At wdet.org. We'll talk to you next week.